Two Dead Girls in Jubilene contains material that may be upsetting to some audiences, including sudden loud noises, adult language, and depictions of murder and suicide. For more information, please find us on Instagram at Two Dead Girls Pod. That's the number 2 Dead Girls Pod.
There used to be a tree out back. This towering white pine that Pa called God's toothpick. She sprouted when Corydon was a capital, when Indiana was an estate. And by the time a girl named Myra climbed her sappy branches, hung a tire swing in her shade, she was as tall as Rick Smits, as old as Methuselah. They say this is flyover country, but you had to pull up, just a little, to clear God's toothpick. Not because she could literally reach airplanes, just as a matter of respect. For a deep-rooted, eternal thing that had forgot more about the world than any of us would ever know. And then one night, the summer of my 7th birthday, a straight-line windstorm plucked her like a dandelion. And if Ma's head had been on her pillow, it would have flossed her right between the eyeballs. Instead, Ma was on her feet, awoken seconds earlier by the sound of Annabelle's cries. My baby sister had a nightmare, the story goes, and saved my mother's life. Parents can't help but compare their kids. And between Annie and me, it wasn't a fair fight. But on the subject of God's toothpick, things went a step too far. You can't saint someone for something they did in a dead sleep. It was an outburst on this subject that landed me as a one-girl chain gang, helping Pa repair a tree-shaped hole in our house. I piled sticks and hauled lumber, the dismembered remains of a tree I thought would last forever. Some of it even served to repair the very hole it wrought. And when we finished each night, I held the big blue plastic sheet steady, while Pa tacked it over the slowly mending hole. "Keeps out the dark," he'd say. He thought that was clever. Keeps out the dark. Anyway, years later, that's how I knew to ask.
Do you sell tarps?
You mean those big blue plastic...
Hi, Mr. Jenkins.
Oh, I got shower curtains. Will that work?
Maybe.
Well, if you can tell me what it's for...
I'm not allowed to say.
This one's got a rubber duck print. I got two of this one. Worms, I guess. No, caterpillars.
Someone threw a brick through our window. I guess whoever did it, they think Pa killed my sister. And maybe Ma's trying to cover it up. It doesn't really matter what's on them, the shower curtains. It's cold in the house. And it's weird without Pa. We need something to keep out the dark.
Tonight's top story, a deadly storm, a missing girl, and in Jubilene, Indiana, a homicide investigation.
Annabelle was this beautiful, innocent little girl.
Well, beautiful is a stretch. Hang on, are you recording this?
We're learning a second girl, Jessica Kaplan, has been found dead.
There was no wiggle room for gut instincts. And anyway, this wasn't anything concrete, just a confluence of coincidence.
Conspiracy. That's what I say. Goddamn conspiracy.
33% of murders in this country are never solved. Any reasonable person can see
this. This here's a small town. Them girls was killed by a grass cutting. Him singing Jubilener. That's why he ain't been stopped.
No. The murder of Jesse Kaplan could have been stopped. Except nobody cared about Annie. Nobody did nothing until the second girl died.
You know who did it.
Ronnie Newsom. Ronnie Nuisance, I call him.
This is Two Dead Girls in Jubilene. Chapter 5, God's Toothpick. After 3 days barely sleeping, I went back to Ma's last night and crashed in my jeans. I woke late to a lively text chain between Berto and Liam. The former has Jenkins Pharmacy menace Ronnie Newsom pinned to a parole program in Illinois, drug dealing. The latter is cutting bureaucratic red tape, trying to get a phone interview. They're a good team. I skim my inbox as I stumble back to Pa's room in a bath towel. I skip subjects like urgent provincial health lawsuit. I'm looking for Ronnie's background check, and surprise no one but myself when I open Liam's instead. Berto was right. Honors at UMD, Baltimore PD commendations, clean as a whistle. There's the full name of his wife, Frances Nika Esfahani. I hover over the name, then select, copy, web browser, paste. I add a fourth word for good measure. Obituary. Hey. What's up? Did you get Ronnie?
Still working on it. But Mays has something for you.
It's the Jubilene Methodist e-bulletin from 2 weeks ago.
Hi, Maisie.
Hi. It says, on Sunday, celebrate the 80th birthday of Mr. Tim Jenkins. Festivities to commence immediately following the 11 o'clock service. Hot dogs and potato salad provided.
So, unless he skipped his own birthday party, he didn't kill Pa. Is that the point?
Yeah.
Huh. That's good work, Maisie. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm making more calls. You want to grab your dad's notes and come over?
Later. I'm just now getting dressed. I have to...
Hello? Hello? I think I lost you.
It's gone.
What's gone?
Pa's notes. Oh! Ma, my bag. Someone stole... Is that my shirt?
Almost finished. Do you air dry these sweaters?
I said not to do my laundry.
Well, you said you could do it yourself. That hardly seemed...
There was something extremely important and extremely private in that bag.
Was it...
Give me that. Did you open it?
No. Fell in the basket. I only just found it.
Well, it's privileged material.
For work?
Yes, for work. I could lose my job.
No offense, honey, but
don't come...
you shouldn't leave it lying around.
It wasn't... Why do you do this? I told you not to do my laundry. I'm 34. I mean... Do you enjoy it?
Why else do you think I spent my whole waking life down here washing clothes?
You didn't seem so burdened when it was a pile of Annie's cute little rompers.
Well, at least she had the good sense not to tear the knees out of them. Between you and Ed, I mended more seams and soaked more grass stains than the equipment manager for the Cincinnati Reds.
Then I would have thought you'd be glad to be rid of us. For the sake of a little less drudgery.
Maybe you don't understand this. Because you aren't a mother. Maybe you can't and won't ever. But that drudgery, the labor to create simple, boring, dependable comfort around your little tribe, that is the purest of all love. I'm not saying I enjoyed it, but I hope you'll forgive me saying I miss it anyway. I know there's nothing about this place or this family that you remember fondly, Myra. But I tried. I really tried.
I air dry them. The sweaters? Great. Hey.
So you are alive.
Dad, Tom.
Sorry. Peoria Parole Board's whole music is maddening, and I'm in full-blown nicotine withdrawal because someone...
wants you to live?
Yeah, exactly. Another tape?
Read the spine.
Mama Tried, songs by Merle Haggard and The Strangers.
It's Ronnie Newsom, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anything I need to know before we dive in?
Ronnie's a talker. He'll probably fill in the gaps.
You know, I didn't steal a few bucks or whatever. I stole 5 G's. And Mr. J didn't call the cops because he's making all that cash filling bogus scripts for Oxy.
You're claiming Tim Jenkins is a drug dealer?
I ain't claiming nothing. He's got it up on his sign.
Very funny. You aren't a very good criminal, are you, Ronnie?
What's that supposed to mean?
You spent a lot of time in prison.
So I got bad luck.
What you got is a big mess.
Why are you really all the way out here, Mr. A? I think it ain't to ask about a smash and grab. And I know it ain't to spread the word of the King James, because Graham's church gave up on that when I scared off volunteer number 3.
You don't believe in God?
I believe. Just figure he's a real piece of work. Letting people like your girl die. Sitting on his... incomprehensibly large, invisible keister, all-powerful thumb up his all-knowing asshole. Don't duck the question. Why are you here?
If you really took Jenkins for 5 G's, how'd you manage, for once in your life, not to brag your way into the nearest prison?
What are you talking about?
Come on, Ronnie. July 19th, 1997. Tim says you're too stupid to get away with murder. But, I'm not so sure.
Jesus! You think I... He's no genius himself. You know, getting robbed him...
I don't think it's funny.
Christ, me neither. You only know me as a screw-up, but I lost my folks. I can understand what you went through, losing her like that. She'd smile and wave when most other people'd avoid me. Guess you count that against me, but I was sad about what happened.
If you mean that... I think you better tell me what really happened.
All right. After I robbed Mr. J, I went to see my silent partner. When I got out to his place, he's gone. Storm's rolling in, so I turn back, fixing to lay low until he crawls out of whatever hole he fell into. Would have been better off crawling in after him. Some asshole sideswiped me on 19, driving like a maniac, bangs the shit out of my front corner, does a full 360 into the ditch, and then sits there with his high beams on me, accusatory, like I'm the one who couldn't keep it on my side of the yellow. But my caprice was stuffed with stolen cash, so I fled. I knew if this guy called in the wreck, Donnelly was going to be at Graham's door inside an hour. He tied the car to the cash, to the pharmacy, me to the robbery. I was 17, but I knew a 5-year sentence when I saw one. I convinced Graham to follow me up to Terre Haute, left the car with a real degenerate mechanic, 3 G's to fix it, 1,500 more to say he'd had it all week. Dumped the last 500 behind Mr. J's, peace offering. And then, you're right, for once in my life, I shut my mouth. Because by the next morning, I knew if anybody ever got serious about that robbery or looking for my car, they weren't just going to put me away. They were going to end up asking what you're asking. You working for the cops? You have to tell me if you are. You can't lie.
Hang on, Ronnie. Your partner was gone the day Annie went missing.
Well, he tended to be gone. Hiding from girls who found out about each other. But I don't think...
What? Who is he?
I'm no snitch.
You snitched on Tim. You're scared.
I ain't scared.
Then who is he?
Wayne Harmon, okay?
Wayne Harmon?
You know. Jesse Kaplan's uncle?
Wayne Harmon. Crap. I know a lot about the death of Jesse Kaplan, but I know very little about her life. About the day-to-day existence of the girl whose memory is so gruesomely intertwined with Annabelle. And I know even less about her uncle, Wayne Harmon. Was he investigated? I'm not sure. There were so many suspects, so many dead ends. His connection to Jesse is obvious, but to Annie?
You okay in there?
Sorry, all yours.
Oh, that's okay. I wanted to ask, what do you think about the tape?
I don't know. Still processing.
Your dad's a good investigator. Gets people talking.
Not how I remember him. You're a strange kid. You know that?
Myra, your cell's ringing. Oh.
Thanks. Brenno again?
It's a blocked number.
Hello? Hello? Who's there? Hello?
What was that?
I'm not sure.
Dad. Phone?
Oh, yeah.
Is that a landline?
Job requirement. Mace?
I'll get it.
Hello?
Chef
okay,
residence?
All right. Slow down.
He's on the other
Say
line.
It again?
Can I take a message?
Ma? What's wrong? Did he say anything else?
Just to come fast.
I should have known something like this was gonna happen. Ma?
Denson!
Mara?
In here, Sheriff.
Are you two okay?
Yeah, I think so.
They are, technically. Sheriff Deputy Denson McDougal is seated on the sofa. The grown-up version of the kid I was crushing on when I sent Annie to her death. He has an unholstered firearm in his lap. His finger isn't near the trigger, thank God, because he's shaking like a leaf. Did I ever consider that he may harbor his own demons from Annie? No. Something to unpack another time. Ma stands in the kitchen doorway, steady as ever. Though her right palm is swaddled in a bloody dish rag and her left is tucked around her midsection, warding off the chill of a breeze that should be outside. It is in here, the breeze, because between Denson and Ma, the floor is littered with broken window glass. Big, jagged chunks, like icicles, and a dusty spray, like frost. And at the center of that winter wonderland is a rusty red brick. Like a film noir corpse on Christmas Eve, just waiting for a chalk outline. Ma, you're bleeding.
Just a scrape.
Let me look at it.
I'm fine.
cleaning it up when I got here. That's how she cut her hand. I told her to leave it. Told her you'd want it undisturbed.
Yeah. All right, good.
Sorry, Sheriff. I can never resist a bit of drudgery. I'm going to wash up. Here, Myra. Guess you'll know what to do with this.
What's that she gave you?
Just an old shower curtain. Mr. Jenkins told me to take the Caterpillar shower curtain, no charge, that day in 97. Told me to fill up a cart with whatever I needed, actually. Maybe that was kindness, or maybe he just didn't want to look me in the eye at the register. But I raced around the store collecting ding-dongs and frozen pizzas anyway. I thought I knew what a cart full of groceries could mean to Ma that week. I thought here was something that a favorite child would pull off. But when I came out, Ma wasn't looking. She was turned to the passenger window, conversing in hushed tones with Oscar Stillwell.
The public defender wants him to confess.
He didn't do anything wrong.
Don't you think I know that? Sorry.
I'm gonna go to the station. Say we were out hunting when it happened.
No, absolutely not.
Why not?
You'll cause nothing but trouble for him. Stumbling in there half drunk, spouting fake alibis.
I'll just say we were together. You can't disprove that.
No. But you could forgive him for wondering why your friend's been in jail for 2 weeks, and you only just now remembered. Somebody threw a brick through our window.
Did you report it?
No. Donnelly will say it was just kids. Prank.
Is that what you think?
No. I think it was him.
Donnelly?
No, him. Ever killed Annie.
Ma, look, I got groceries. Mr. Jenkins said to fill up the cart.
Hey, Myra.
They were free.
Myra, get in the car.
But just look.
Leave them. Get in the car.
Brenda, let me help.
Want to guess how many people called to help when word got out Annie was dead? How many helped when they heard Ed had been rounded up? I'll tell you, none. Not even you. I thought that was why people moved to towns like this. Tiny little places where everybody knows everyone. To feel safe? To be surrounded by people you can depend on? It's a fraud, Oscar. It all blows over in the first gust of wind.
Tell me what I can do.
You can leave us alone. We'd rather have our dignity than your pity.
Brenda!
Ma left Tim's milk curdling in the sun. But I managed to smuggle the Caterpillar shower curtain. And the ding-dongs. Parents can't help but compare their kids. And kids, they can't help but compare their parents. Pa was never the same after we lost Annie. Broken, listless, sad. He retreated into himself. Ma, she was sad too, but she was never broken. After Annie, she became a force of nature, this iron-willed, towering version of herself. And the worse things got, the stronger she became. Or was it the stronger she acted? That's not the sort of thought you have when you're 11 years old, when your world is upside down and your mother is the only thing you're holding on to, when somebody has just thrown a brick through your window. But then, life has a funny way of giving you second chances. Ma? It's me.
You've come to decide if I need stitches. You should remember I've lived on a farm for 40 years.
No, I wanted to say I'm sorry. About the laundry.
It wasn't about the laundry.
I know. You always seem fine. Somehow, you always keep going. I think that makes it easy for me to ignore that you had to go through all of it, same as I did. And not just drift through it, like a kid. Like me. You had to bear the full weight of it. When I couldn't. And Pa couldn't.
I'm sorry I took your clothes without asking.
It's fine, Ma.
No, I... You grew up all at once. Not like the cliché. One day you were 11 and Annie was 7. And the next day you had to be a grown-up. And Annie was gone. I didn't get eased out of having kids. I didn't learn boundaries. I don't know how to be a mother to someone who doesn't need me. Sorry.
We study the wood paneling in silence, because that's what you do when you live in a no-crying farmhouse. And I realize I'm looking at pieces of God's toothpick. The sliced-up husk of a supposedly strong, eternal thing that in the end was leveled by a breeze. I recall how Ma embraced me at the foot of Pa's coffin, as if the years and ugly sentiments passed between us had never happened, as if I was the one that deserved to be comforted when she had lost a husband, and I had lost... what? A father I barely knew? I'm struck, really struck, by how gravely I've misunderstood her. How all this bearing up and soldiering on since Annie's death is little more than a coping mechanism. Diametrically opposed to Pa's, and yet born from the same aches. She's always been my tree, towering steadfast. But trees are not eternal, and we must remind ourselves, occasionally, that surviving the last storm doesn't guarantee they'll survive the next one. So I repay the coffin-side embrace. And I mean a lot more than laundry when I say, I do still need you, Ma.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Could anybody point Denson towards a broom?
Yeah. Yeah, this way.
I can zip you up to Doc Smith in the cruiser. You want someone to take a look at that hand?
It's just a scratch.
What do you think?
I had a look around. It could be kids. Adair.
I feel myself slowly nod my head. But I know. I can feel from Liam's glance that he knows too. This is no dare. It's a warning. Or worse, a taunt. I have this feeling that we've been sleeping in the shadow of God's toothpick, and the wind is beginning to howl.
You still think your dad's death was an accident?
I don't know. But I don't think this was.
Of our home, I've never wanted to know why you could never let go.
Two Dead Girls in Jubilene was written, directed, and produced by Ethan Whelan. It stars Emily Goss as Myra, Zachary Cantrell as Liam and Denson, Susan Harmon as Brenda, Michael McShane as Ed, Marcelo Tubert as Berto, John Ali as Oscar, Haley Kewen as Maisie, Carrie Gutierrez as Young Myra, Mark Jacobson as Ronnie, Don Green as Mr. Jenkins, original score by Kevin Hutchins, Associate Producer, Emily Goss. Associate Producer, Zachary Cantrell. One Eye Open was written and recorded by Andrea Perez and Peyton Widener. Thanks to Kat, Ron, the Evans, Monisha, Jack, David, and Tyler, without whom there could be no Jubilee. If you enjoyed listening, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts, or tell a friend. For cast bios, episode transcripts, and more, find Our Little Town on Instagram, at @2deadgirlspod. That's at @2deadgirlspod. Thanks. Two Dead Girls and Jubilene is a work of fiction. Any resemblance to real events or to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
Hi folks, Ethan here. I'm the creator, writer, and director of Two Dead Girls and Jubilene. I wanted to take a moment to thank you, on behalf of our cast and crew, for spending a little bit of your day with us. Jubilene is a deeply personal creative endeavor, and it is produced independently. But that's a misnomer, because in reality, it does depend on two things. The first is you, dear listener. We are here telling this story because you press play. And every time you do that, every time one of your friends does that, you're helping us continue. The second thing? Well, that's the ever-growing community of independent audio fiction creators who excite and inspire us. So in that spirit, I want to share with you a trailer for one of my inspirations, the Godfrey Audio Guide. I hope you'll check out their show, and I hope we'll see you here next week for another episode of Two Dead Girls and Jubilene.
Hello and welcome to the Annabelle H. Godfrey Historic Estate and Museum. Thank you for joining us on the Godfrey's world-famous audio guide. I'll be your host for the duration of your time here at the estate, and look forward to enlightening you as to the history and unique beauty of Annabelle's eclectic collection of art, antiquities, and curiosities. But before we begin, I must go over a few notices and estate rules. Firstly, on the chance that you failed to read the fine print when checking out this audio guide, and are currently standing in the middle of our atrium, waiting for a staff member to come and collect you, this is a self-guided tour. Each audio guide is equipped with a GPS tracking device, which triggers the commentary for the nearest collection item. This provides the dual benefit of a custom experience for you and helping the Godfrey staff locate unreturned audio guides. Many audio guides are discovered abandoned in dark and seldom traversed corners of the estate, their patrons nowhere to be found. Which leads me to my second point of business. Stay out of the shadows. Thirdly, breaks in commentary as you move between collection items may be filled with historical tidbits about the estate, details about current or upcoming exhibits and offerings, general announcements, or words from our sponsor. Do not be alarmed when these start playing. And no, you cannot mute or skip them. Fourthly, and this should go without saying, do not touch any collection items. This is for your own safety. That's all for now. Shall we begin?
The Godfrey Audio Guide is a fiction podcast that blends horror, sci-fi, and art history, both real and imagined, and which guides the listener through the mysterious Godfrey Estate and Museum. Interested in taking the tour? Find the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. See you at the museum!